I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. I'm here today with Roger Grimes, Data-Driven Defense Evangelist for KnowBefore, the world's first and largest new school security awareness training and simulated phishing platform that helps you manage the ongoing problem of social engineering. To learn more about KnowBefore, visit knowbefore.com. Roger, welcome back. So great to be speaking with you again today.
I'm always glad to be here.
So Roger, there is a new dangerous and persistent malware family in town classified as metamorphic, and it's being called Tardigrade by the Bioeconomy Information Sharing and Analysis Center as a nod to the microorganism tardigrades or water bears. Thanks, Neil deGrasse Tyson and Cosmos for teaching me about water bears. But they can pretty much survive any environment, including outer space. So seems like a very fitting name, because this metamorphic malware is it's targeting the biotech industry, including the infrastructure behind vaccine manufacturing. And this was first reported just this past Monday by Michael Kahn at PC Mag. And it's gotten some pickup since then. But can you tell us more about this complex malware and what you know about metamorphic type or polymorphic malwares?
Yeah, tell you what, you know, it is, first of all, kudos to them naming this after one of the hardest to destruct organisms in the world. I mean, you know, yeah, the water bears, I've read about them for years, of course. I think we had some satellite that wrecked. I think it was on Mars. It could have been the moon or something. But either way, that, you know, there's now this chance that we have organically polluted some planet or asteroid or something that we haven't really even gone to yet. So right. The idea that we may possibly pollute our environments in the future, you know, in space, you're like, yeah, we've already done it. Been there, done that. And just like that, this metamorphic code is really not new. The first time I remember seeing, and we used to call it polymorphic. Metamorphic's a little bit different, but okay. First time I saw polymorphic code was, believe it or not, back in 1991, there was this Bulgarian, Sofia Bulgarian programmer called Dark Avenger that wrote some of the best computer, you know, from the standpoint where you just had to go, that was really well done.
Yeah.
And he was a heavy metal rock lover, and he used to put lyrics to some of his favorite groups in his viruses. And at one point, I think it was 1991, it might have been 1992, but he wrote a virus kind of in ode or flirting with a virus antivirus researcher named Sarah Gordon. Sarah Gordon was kind of new to the antivirus world, and either innocently or intentionally said, hey, I would love someone to write a virus after me. And this guy, Dark Avenger, which, by the way, decades and decades later, we do not know who he is. One of the biggest mysteries in the early antivirus world was who the Dark Avenger was. I would love to know who this guy is. We all have, it's actually in the antivirus circles, it's a really big mystery, like who is DB Cooper? Everybody wants to know who this Dark Avenger guy was, because we assume he was actually in the antivirus industry, possibly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you always hear people go, do the antivirus people write the viruses? You're like, there's like a million antivirus virus programs out there, malware programs. They don't need to write anything. But there have been one or two instances back in the late 80s, early 90s where it possibly happened. This Dark Avenger guy did it. But anyways, I actually got early on in my antivirus career in 1992, March 1992, I got quoted in Newsweek magazine, still one of my favorite highlights of all time. But that issue was about the Michelangelo boot virus, partition infector virus, DOS days, that was going around taking down hospitals and things like that, kind of like ransomware today, but it's just wiping out hard drives. I wasn't asking for a ransom at all. It was just going off. And so there was this big thing, hey, you got to search and see if you got Michelangelo virus. Well, I was quoted as saying, hey, while everybody's looking for Michelangelo virus, really this bigger virus, and it was called Sarah. He had made a couple of them by then, by 1992. But I said, it's polymorphic. And I was working in conjunction with John McAfee, disassembling viruses at the time. I said, really, we're having a hard time detecting it accurately. We could actually. So what it did, this polymorphic code, what it did different is, prior to that, if a virus really wanted to hide itself just from being scanned by an antivirus detector, it would re-encrypt itself. There were some early versions of viruses that would encrypt themselves. I think we called them cryptoviruses and things. But this guy, Dark Avenger, becoming the first polymorphic malware, at least that I know of, is like that term, didn't know that term until his viruses came out that did it. He would change the modules. Like in every malware, every bit of programming, you have module names and subroutine names and what they do. He was smart enough that he said, okay, I'm going to change, tell it, pre-program it to change every time it runs to have different modules, different module names, and be in different locations. So that was where this polymorphic thing came from. And it really did make it hard to detect it. And, you know, because prior to that, even if you, even if a malware, most malware encrypts itself in some way, but the antivirus, most antivirus programs will run the malware, the suspected malware programs in a virtual machine and then watch its activity there. And all malware must, if it's encrypted, must decrypt itself. And they can see and look into the virus or the malware program when it does it. So he was the first to say, well, I'm going to change the way my malware at the time computer virus looks, polymorphic. And it really did substantially complicate detecting malware accurately. Actually, we could detect all of his variants almost 100%, if not 100%. I think we could detect 100% of his variants. But we also had a lot of false positives. Like I think we were detecting a DOS, an MS-DOS program is one of his viruses at one point. So the problem wasn't that we weren't detecting this program, is that in the process of trying to detect his polymorphic viruses accurately, we're getting a high rate of false positives, which is causing a problem because you can't have a lot of those and people still use your programs because they're wiping out legitimate files and things. So it's been around a while, this polymorphic code, since 1991 at least. What's different with this metamorphic code is that it not only changes and updates its coding, but it's changing its coding and its behavior based upon detecting different environments. So polymorphic code just changed itself all the time. But metamorphic code, at least is the way that I look at it. I don't know if anyone's defined it completely, but what seems to me to be different is that it's saying, okay, I'm in this environment, so I'm going to do this. And I'm going to do this in this environment. I got this environment, I'm going to do this. So the polymorphic code just changes itself. Metamorphic code said I'm changing myself based upon this if-then statement of what environment that I'm in. And let me say, this is not the first metamorphic code. It's an evolution. I mean, Stuxnet, which is probably one of the most famous, you know, cyber warfare programs in the world, where the U.S. government and the Israeli government made malware to take down Iranian nuclear fuel centrifuges. It would act one way when it was inside of an environment that essentially only was a possible or only in the Iranian nuclear centrifuge fuel factories, and then completely different outside of that. So that was, you know, kind of metamorphic in a way. So this is just another thing. And let me say, I've also I've been telling people for about 1 or 2 years, and I think even in this podcast that we've been doing, I think I've said this for about 1 or 2 years, when people say, well, what do you think the future of cybersecurity and defense and all that is, I've been saying that it's good bot versus bad bot, that I think you're going to have these traveling bots. Like right now you have you have antivirus scanners and things that look for badness for hackers and malware. And you have threat hunters, which are people that are hired to look for signs of malware in hackers and all that sort of stuff. But I think it's really going to become these automated roving bots that you release them on your network and they go looking for hackers and malware and report back when they think they've found something. Maybe they even do some self-defense stuff right from the start. And I said, I think the bad bots are going to do the same thing, that these, you know, you already have these automated replicating worms and virus programs. Well, these bots will just, bad bots will just break into an environment. If they see a Windows machine, they'll actually do different attacks against Windows versus Mac versus Linux versus BSD. And I think that, you know, they'll say, oh, this Windows machine has UAC. Let's do this thing to disable UAC. Oh, they have this antivirus program, this firewall. Let's disable it doing this. Well, you know, viruses and worms and stuff have always had the ability to do it. But it was really, again, kind of predetermined, like every time you go and look for these antivirus programs and turn it off. Well, I think what's going to be different is that these bad bots are going to have more, you know, intelligence built into them, more artificial intelligence built into them to say, okay, when I get this, I do this. When I get this, I do that. When I have this environment, I do this. When I do this, I look for this. So I think the future of computer security and attacks is these good bots versus bad bots, where both sides are going to be using increasing levels of quote unquote artificial intelligence and fight each other, you know, and that the future in 10 years from now, I think some of the highest paying jobs in computer security will be the algos, you know, the people that make the algorithms that are behind the bots. Like for the last two decades, some of the highest paid people in the financial industry were the algos, the people that made the algorithms that decided how to buy and sell, you know, stocks and things like that. I think the algos would be some of the highest paid people in computer security. So this is, I believe, kind of generation one of that good, you know, if you're starting to see malware that is modifying itself based upon the environment that it's in, I think that's just the first stage, the first generation of what is going to be quite normal a year from now.
Very interesting, very fascinating, and a great history. So thank you, Roger. I know that you know so much about all of this. And as far as attacking the biotech industry, I know that with some past ransomware gangs, they've said that they are not going to attack, you know, they have some kind of ethical code, but for this malware, I mean, what's at stake here? What is there to gain for cyber criminals? Is it just money or what are they trying to get from the biotech industry by attacking them?
Well, it's a little bit of everything, right? It's the money. By the way, all of those claims we're not going to attack the biotech industry just completely false and failed. And, yeah. And the biotech industry, after those claims were made, it lasted about a week or two before they became the most attacked industry during the COVID thing. And the reason why is that's where the money is, and also intellectual property. You have nation states, Russia, China, North Korea, that don't have the, you know, aren't as advanced in research as other countries. And so they intentionally targeted biotech to steal intellectual property so they could make up their own COVID vaccines and stuff like that versus having to pay, you know, some other nation states biotech pharmacy company. So it's, you know, what is the gain there? Money alone. Like if you have a biotech company is trying to produce, $1 billion, multi-billion-dollar product, and you can ransomware them, you can get them to pay up because they think paying tens of millions of dollars is nothing to protect the multi-billion-dollar revenue stream. And on top of that, you have nation states that are just trying to, steal the intellectual property. So, anytime a cybersecurity criminal says, "Oh, I'm not going to attack hospitals, I'm not going to attack orphans," you know, or something like that, right. I just take it with a grain of salt, because they're unethical criminals to start with. Even if you have some criminals that are more ethical than others, there's always some other criminal that's going to fill the void and attack, you know, and beat up puppies and things like that. So if they can make money, they'll kill the mother to get the money.
Right. And for this, when it comes to biotech vaccines, all these things that are so topical over the past, 18 plus months during the pandemic, especially, should the general public be concerned about this? Or is this something that's just kind of always been happening? We've always been fighting it. It's the first time that I've heard of something like this exactly. But I know that, we've experienced things like this in the past.
Yeah, I think we should be concerned, but it's really pretty bad out there already. You know, some people go, "Well, what do you think about the state of computer security?" I'm like, it's really pretty horrible. Yeah. It's really, really horrible. Like, it's good, we're using MFA or something. No, it's all horrible, and MFA isn't going to save us. And this is just another evolving threat that's just going to absolutely get worse. And until we fix the internet and make it harder for criminals to attack us and not be punished, it's just going to be worse and worse and worse. So the general public should be concerned, but they should have already been concerned. And this is just an expected increase in the attack. We're still, once again, as defenders, doing whack-a-mole defenses, going, "Oh my God, this new thing, we got to figure this out." Well, we haven't figured out any of the old things. I mean, We haven't figured out ransomware. We haven't figured out business email compromises. We haven't figured out social engineering. We haven't figured out how to patch our software. Like, it's really, really bad. And this is just yet another thing that we need to worry about. So hopefully the general public has been worried about it. But I always say they don't worry about it enough because we're not fixing it, right? It's just continuing to play whack-a-mole, and we muddle along.
Excellent. So switching topics now, I saw, Roger, that you shared some information on LinkedIn from abnormal security researchers about how they found a phishing campaign that's targeting TikTok influencers. So I'd love to hear from you now how this campaign works. Is it experiencing success? You know, what do the cyber criminals want from taking over a successful social media account? Anything and everything. Would love to hear from you.
Yeah, it's interesting with the people targeting the TikTok influencers. I mean, in one way, it makes a lot of sense because they are the driving forces, that are able to contact, tens of millions of people. And if those accounts are very valuable and powerful, right? They have a lot of reach. And the people that listen to these TikTok influencers, they readily will click links that they send because these influencers are trying to sell products. And so when when a TikTok influencer sends them a link, it's just an advanced type of social engineering. You're going to have a large percentage of people click that link. And a lot of times once they click the link, it's game over. I've even had, Russians create accounts and talk to me on LinkedIn. And before that, a long time ago, FidoNet, if you remember that decades ago, but they would create these fake accounts, try to gain, acting like they're a friend, and then try to get me to click on links or do things, reveal information. I laugh. It's been going on so long. Like if I have a beautiful young lady come on to my computer security channels and try to engage with me and flirt, I immediately think Russian spy. Like it laughs, but it's happened a couple of times before. And I'm not the only one. They've targeted hundreds and hundreds of journalists and people fighting for freedom and that sort of stuff. So, this whole idea that they will break into people's accounts and then use that to try to target that person's fans is not new. But what is new, I think, is they're doing it in an automated way. What's interesting, these TikTok influencers need to be told, hey, you're being targeted. People are trying to target you to figure out, how they can infect your customers and fans and that sort of stuff. So there needs to be a really strong, aggressive social or security awareness training campaign by TikTok, by YouTube, by all the others. They teach them how to, they're spending tens of millions of dollars to teach these branders and influencers how to market their products and how to brand themselves, where a big part of that has to be computer security. They need to give them security awareness training because most of the time they're being socially engineered themselves. And so if you teach those TikTok and YouTube influencers how not to be socially engineered, they're less likely to then end up being an avenue to infect their fans and followers. So this is, again, kind of a natural thing that, we can't expect that the average TikTok influencer is any more computer security aware than anybody else out on the internet. I would dare to say that they're probably less up on computer security issues. And so we need to change that equation. And until we educate them and help them better protect themselves, they're going to keep falling and dropping like flies and their fans, infected because of it.
Well, Roger, as always, thank you so much for joining us today. I really enjoyed our conversation and I'm looking forward to next week.
Well, Hillary, it's always a pleasure talking to you. Look forward to talking to you again next week. And thanks, everybody, for listening.
I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Joining me today was Roger Grimes, data-driven defense evangelist for KnowBefore, the world's first and largest new school security awareness training and simulated phishing platform that helps you manage the ongoing problem of social engineering. To learn more about our sponsor, KnowBefore, visit knowbefore.com. And you can keep up with all of our media at cybercrimemagazine.com.